husband, I was like, I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to say. My kids, I do have teenagers, and they don't even usually come to youth group. So if I can't convince them to go to youth group, I'm not sure what I'm going to share with a bunch of youth groupers. But then, a couple nights later, my friend Randy called, and she told me that her and her daughter were busy making first night bags as a service project. And she said, you might relate to this. You might know what first night bags are when somebody is going into a homeless shelter or when a child is taken from their home and going to foster care. It's a bag that you can give them. And she said, I know your husband is on the board of a homeless organization, so you might know what I'm talking about. And I stopped in my tracks and I said, Randy, I know what you're talking about, but not because my husband's on the board of Homeless Solutions in Morris County, because a long time ago, that doesn't seem like that long ago to me, but I got a first night bag when I was removed from my home. So I grew up in Spokane, Washington, which is someone you've probably never heard of, except it was made famous by Cass growing up there, and Silas getting married there, so thanks, Silas, for that being in.
Thank you, Cass.
If I were to choose one word to say how my childhood growing up was, I would say inconsistent. I never knew what I was going to come home to. My parents, I was an only child here, my parents were pretty young. They both came from really broken histories, and they just didn't have a lot to give to a child at that point. My mom really struggled with some mental health conditions, and my dad struggled with substance abuse, although he was a teacher, which is kind of a funny correlation. But I moved a lot. My parents they divorced early, but they would move in with other people, move back, move out, move back. Lots of inconsistency I never knew. But then when I was 12, my life took a pretty significant change. My mom, during one of her periods when she was living out, became pregnant, had a child, moved back in, and she really kind of lost it at that point. From 12 to 15, it was very tumultuous in my household. I was in and out of some foster homes. I'm really speed running 30 years here, so if you have questions, I'm happy to answer. I was in and out of some foster homes, some safe houses. I lived in a group house for a while. I lived with some neighbors and some friends and their parents, and at some point in that range, some neighbors took me to a church. I remember learning at least like Bible stories. So I had some exposure to churches, but we definitely weren't a church-going family. The final straw when I was 15, this is kind of a funny story, which is ironic since I'm talking about child abuse here, but my mom called the police and she told them that her teenager was endangering her baby by making her beat the teenager when she should be watching the baby. So the police were like, my mom and I joke about this now, but the police were like, yeah, but we'll be right over. So they removed me from my home that night and they gave me a first night bag with a teddy bear in it. And I had no contact with my mom for 10 years after that night. And I remember that first night bag. One of my really meaningful memories from that night was the kindness that that police officer removing me from my home showed me. And just his gentle way, that was really impactful to me. So at that point, it was actually kind of convenient for my dad, who'd been having an affair with a woman across the state anyway. So he moved in with her. We moved to Seattle. Which is someone you might have heard of in Washington State, a little bigger than Spokane. But the woman he moved in with had four sons, and she really definitely probably would have preferred that he not come with this package deal of a teenage girl, which, I mean, you guys all know teenage girls, can you blame her? So I didn't really feel like I fit in there when I got there, and so my solution was to throw myself into school, into really trying to find other parental roles. So I made relationships with teachers, and I met some people at school who took me to a youth group, much like this. And at some point in that window, I went to a harvest festival, and with a youth group, gave my life to Jesus on a hayride, which is memorable, right? In that phase, I jumped right into a lot of events that were happening, and yet I would tell you, I had a pretty happy childhood. I actually really loved high school. I had a lot of fun. The youth group families and that social network that I created there was impactful, and all of these people were definitely pouring into my life and playing into my life, and even when I was in like a group home or something, I never really really felt like I quite fit in, but I was really grateful to be there. I felt like, man, their situation, everybody else here has a situation much worse than mine. I don't really deserve all the love and support and kindness that they're getting. Maybe I can shower it on them, I don't know. They pretty much agreed with me that I didn't belong there, I'm not sure why, but it was hard for me to connect with peers because I was always kind of seeking this parental role. But then after high school, given that I had really poured myself into school to escape home, I did get into the University of Washington with a scholarship and a lot of student loans. And I joined a sorority there. I don't know what you think of when you hear sorority. There's not a lot of girls here, but most people think something akin to like Animal House. That's probably too old for the kids here, but or like, I don't know, Legally Blonde. Generally, movie depictions of sororities are not a lot of Bible study and prayer. But that really was what it was for me. So I made some lifelong friends there. I was part of a Bible study and some families that I met through that. Also really kind of showered me in parental roles. I got really involved in our campus ministry. And when I think of my sorority, I think of it more akin to similarities between that and the group home that I lived in. It was just a very different demographic of people. But I didn't really feel like I fit in there either because I was always kind of ashamed of my history. So I'm in this place where I meet a lot of other kids who have this great Bible-loving family and these married parents and these parents who had always told them, you're going to college and this is what you're going to do. And mine were like, yes, if that's what you're going to do, go ahead, figure out how to pay for it. But while I never felt like I fit in, I was finding what I needed, if that makes sense. So I met my husband while I was in college. We got married at that church. That church became really impactful to me. I was an intern one summer at the church that was affiliated with our college, and I lived with a family, which is what led us last year to host Logan, who was the intern last summer. I had a lot of fond memories of that time in my life. Once we got married, my husband, he's a really hard worker. He just kept getting promoted and promoted, and then all of a sudden, they started moving us around. So we moved from Seattle out here for a couple years. We lived in New Jersey. My son, Jay, is a twin. They were born out here in New Jersey, and when they were 6 months old, we moved to San Diego. And so there's a lot of moving around, and here's where I gotta say, 7 or 8 different schools and some different foster homes made it really easy for me to move across the country, make new friends, find new people. My husband's family still lives in the house he was born in, and it was much more difficult for him when we moved out here. So I felt like, all right, well, there's something to be said for that. I'm really grateful that I now know how to transplant and how to meet new people and make new friends. While we were in San Diego, a fortuitous thing happened. I was home with, I had my daughter in San Diego, so she's a Cali girl, and if you ever meet her, she definitely lives her life like a Cali girl. I got a knock on the door, and it was a neighbor looking for her dog, and we started talking, and she was like, oh my gosh, 3 little kids. I go to this church, they have a young moms program, there's a preschool there, you should try it. We tried it, and it became our home in San Diego, our home away from home in San Diego, Palmerada Christian Church. While I was there, one Sunday, I was just sort of impacted by the message, and I went up in front of the church, and I recommitted my life to Christ, because I felt like I had a new identity now. I was a wife, I was a mother, and I wanted to commit that to Jesus, and that really sort of changed who I am. 2 of my kids ended up having significant health issues that church really walked through with us, and felt like a family. And one really impactful thing there was during our new members class. I still had these lingering doubts, this lingering sort of I'm not good enough feeling that I just had always had. And when we had to go around and give our testimony, and when I told my story, someone who I really respected as an elder in the church said to me, it's so obvious how close Jesus has been to you all your life. And I went,
that's it. That's why I never felt like I exactly fit in that safe house. That's why I never felt like my life was that bad, and I'm looking around and thinking, man, that kid's life sucks. Okay, well, you're in the same place, kid. I knew somewhere deep down, I had a heart for Jesus, and there was someone walking with me. And it really impacted me in that time. And that somewhere around that time, too, is also when I heard Good, Good Father, and it became the mantra that I played in my head. I have a good, good father, and my identity is that I'm loved by him. It's who I am. So when I think back to all of the things, I really became who I am by having a lot of different experiences, by being in a lot of different places, by being able to walk with people who were hurting in a lot of different ways. And I'm so grateful for all of those experiences. When I've moved across the country, it's so much easier to move. I have so much more empathy when I meet people now. And I still walk into rooms where I think, man, I don't belong here. But my mantra in my head, before I walk into the room like I did tonight, I think, I'm loved by him. It's who I am. So, in closing, I see where he loved me and how it's who I am. I was loved by the parents. I was loved by him through the parents of friends. I was loved by him through neighbors, through teachers who took me in along the way. I was loved. Oh, I forgot one impactful thing that he'll find funny. At one point I was part of a choir, a traveling youth choir, and I don't know how close anybody else was to me while I was singing, but I'm actually pretty much tone deaf. However, the choir director definitely loved me enough to say, Sonny, we want you to come with us and go to other churches with us. Just stand pretty far from the microphone, or maybe if you want to just like mouth the words, that's fine. So I definitely was loved by that choir director. I was really loved by that policeman when he handed me a first night bag. I was loved by God through the woman who knocked on my door and invited me to Pomerado Christian Church. I was loved by the people there. I was definitely have felt love at Hope Church and through different families that we've met here. And I was loved by Randy when she called me and invited me to make first night bags. And our family will definitely be doing that for some of our hours for school. So I just want to end with Psalm 136. It starts, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. And throughout that psalm, the repetition is, his love endures forever. That is consistency, forever. So we are a part of a story, and I am really thankful. God is the main character in that story. It's an eternal story. And my little short chapter in that story, my character is loved by him. That's who I am. It's my identity, and I'm so grateful for that. So I hope this inspires some of you to see where God has loved you in surprising ways and surprising places. Hopefully for you it's not Grouplum, but maybe it's, you know, you don't see it expectantly in like a sorority. He's always there to love you through other people, through his hands and feet in unexpected ways. And thanks, Silas, for letting me share how he's loved me.
All right, thank you, Sonny.
Thank you.
Let me pray for Sonny, and then we'll go to what's next, all right? God, would that be all of the anthems to our lives, that we are loved by you, and that's who we are. But there's nothing about us, or that's been done to us, or that we've done that trumps that fact, that is above that is greater than our identity, just our identity, that we are loved by you. Would you show us just how much you love us? Would you remind us of the ways in which you have loved us? And would you help us cling to hope, the hope that you will love us, that you are the most consistent thing in person and being and relationship in our life. It's you and your love and pursuit of us. So God, we thank you. We thank you that we're able to just reflect on this and be encouraged by Sonny's vulnerability and a willingness to display your power and your love and greatness in her life. So we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.